Yo!
Yo, we're back for episode 5!
We're back, bitches!
Foomph, baby, foomph!
Foomph! I love the word foomph, foomph so much!
There it is!
Foomph, there it is!
We're doing it!
Foomph is 5 in German, by the way, yes. And it's my favorite word ever.
It's pronounced German.
Okay, you know what? Go home!
Alright, so this week we're gonna talk about having, or what it's like to deal and have immigrant fathers.
We're also gonna talk about some alt-right fashion choices.
Oh yeah, great blog post went out about what these fucks should be wearing. And a quick update on Saudi Arabia and Qatar. Don't worry, we'll keep it real quick.
And a very special report on Syria that you all need to listen to.
Yeah, shit gets real. Also, we're going to end it with some positive stuff, some excellence minutes, plural,
woo-hoo,
about Malala, our girl Malala, and Miss Universe contestant Muna Jama,
woo,
and some other crazy cool things going on in Malaysia. So how could you even, like, miss it?
Yeah, stay in your seats and stay tuned.
Yes.
Burr, 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 burr. That was our theme song.
Who are we? Where did we come from? Who do we become? What is it to be? What to be is it? Where are we? Who are my parents? Where are my pets? Why were we born? We are ethnically ambiguous.
We're back.
We're back.
We're back, 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 back.
That's our new theme song.
It's, I don't know if you know, but the title is called We're Back.
We're Back, yeah. We say it 3 times, and then a 4th time, and then maybe a 5th time if we're feeling it.
Yeah, so Shireen and I took a week to go to Joshua Tree to write that. It was like a wonderful writer's weekend. We
did some yoga on a rock.
Yes,
and
we took some photos in front of more rocks.
Because it doesn't count if you don't take a photo and you post it on Instagram.
We also did some ayahuasca.
It's our weekly thing.
So since we're talking about where I was last, I spent the weekend in San Francisco.
Woo-woo. Hello, cool.
Outside Lands. It's a festival. You may have heard of it. I'm so relatable. Anyway, I just want to say, I fucking hate festivals. I don't like people. I don't like being touched. I don't have any patience for quote-unquote cool people.
Yeah. I feel you.
Who keeps putting these festivals on?
I don't know. People that are masochists.
And I would never pay good money to go to a festival. And I was producing a live podcast there about the Bachelor, Bachelorette franchise. That's right. There's many layers to Anna Hosnier.
Ooh,
that's the only reason I was there. But I do want to humble brag and say I was in VIP all weekend and
yeah, I saw a video of you doing karaoke with Nick Kroll, so that was pretty dope.
Oh, I didn't do karaoke with him. He came to my karaoke party.
Oh, my bad.
Me and Arden Marine threw a karaoke party in SF, and a bunch of comedians came and kind of took it over. But I just want to make it very clear that I'm a party monster.
Oh,
just
yeah.
Just joking. I'm not. I was, ready to go home at 9:30 p.m.
Yeah, and I've been working on this commercial still, so I'm dying in that world.
Shireen is dressed in all black. She has a 7-layer black eyeliner on.
That's
She's going through her
true
emo phase right
oh my
now.
God.
I'm just joking. We're honestly wearing the same outfit.
We did not coordinate
this. We're both, wearing, dark collared, button downs.
Dark collared, black collared.
Yeah.
Collar.
A lot of collars going on in this room.
Button down shirt with black pants.
We also have the same haircut right now, which is kind of funny.
Yeah, I'm tying it so it's not a mullet.
And I'm clipping it so it's not a mullet.
Yeah, we're the same person.
Yeah.
I
feel
this.
Like I'm looking at a mirror of myself.
I could have been you.
And I could have been you. Schwa?
Anyways.
So I want to take the opportunity to apologize about last week's episode. I personally felt like I was being a real trash ass.
I don't think
I
was that bad.
Jet lagged and I was cranky and I was taking it out on Shireen by not caring about anything and being too cool for my thing that I wanted to do to begin with.
So like I forced you into
it. I apologize for being so snippy snappy.
I thought it was fun and different.
It was a great episode, but I felt like we weren't being very personal, and we were just kind of like jumping through these articles that we didn't fully research because we both were really busy.
It was definitely not the best episode, and that's only going to get better.
That's why the title is We Are Terrible at This, because we just had one bad week.
We were both really busy. I'm still really busy, and I'm sure Anna is too. But I'm glad we make time for this still.
The news was like Real Talk Bummer Town.
And it hasn't gotten any better this week. If anything, it's gotten only worse. So.
Yeah.
But I do think this podcast should be more personal. And it's hard for me to get personal, but I will try and I will do it.
One last thought on my weekend in VIP. There is nothing more glamorous than being driven around in a golf cart.
Oh, really?
Holy shit. It really makes you feel like you're the shit. And I know a golf cart is like, yeah, it's a golf cart. Who cares? But once you're riding on it and you're going past all the lines and all the people and you're like, that's right, my feet don't touch the ground. You're like, oh my God, I have made it. I'm on a golf cart.
Being driven by, like, someone your age, probably.
No, it's like being driven by some person who just works at Outside Lands, and you're just like, that's right. Please drive me literally to the back of the stage, because I can't, my feet can't walk on the same ground as these
heathens.
These fucking basic-ass regular people. Yeah.
Okay, I need to grab a tissue, because I've been wiping my nose on my sleeve.
Hey, guess who's
like
the new
trash.
Anna? Shireen's the new me. She's wiping her nose on everything, like I always do.
I've never not had allergies or runny nose. I don't know. Just all the cocaine I do.
Oh, you do cocaine?
No.
That's so interesting. So does Andrew Breitbart.
What?
Sorry, me and Jack O'Brien, my best friend, formerly of crack.com, got into a deep, weird, did Andrew Breitbart die of a cocaine overdose hole?
Damn.
Anyway, I'm also reading that Down the Breitbart Hole, excuse me, the New York Times Magazine piece about Breitbart, and it is wild. I recommend it because it is not what you think. It's almost like this romanticized version of what Breitbart really is. And like after a while, I was kind of being like, wait, do I care? It was weird. So I recommend reading it. It's a very interesting read, if you will.
Yeah.
So I wanted to start out with some weird vibes.
Okay. I don't know where Anna's going, but let's go.
As of late, I'm a 27-year-old woman, mm-hmm. okay? And I really want to talk about dads.
All right.
Specifically Middle Eastern fathers. So this mm-hmm. past weekend, my parents live in the up north. I won't say where because I don't trust any of you. And because I was going up to San Francisco for Outside Lands, I thought I would stop and see them. Mm-hmm. And I had a bit of an altercation with my father, who...
Does he listen to this podcast?
My Persian father, who literally... No, there he couldn't... I would
he
never.
He comments great stuff on our Instagram sometimes.
Yeah, he knows how to comment on Instagrams, on Facebook, but he can't find a subscribe button and then find how to download an episode of a podcast, which is where we like him, you know?
Yeah.
He can look at Instagram, but he can't listen to the words I say.
I genuinely don't know if my parents listen to this, so...
And that's how it should stay.
Yeah.
Sometimes you just don't need to know.
Yeah.
It's very don't ask, don't tell.
Yeah.
Very gays in the military.
I get it. I got the first reference.
Oh, what do
you
know? We're not allowed to have transgenders in the military anymore.
Oh, yeah. So it is ask, don't tell. Yeah. Don't ask. And tell. Show
it's just
and
like,
tell.
No.
Just no.
Just like, no.
So you...
I had an altercation with my father, which made me feel like I was like 14 again.
What happened?
Nothing. I'm not going to get into too many details because I know I have like extended family that listens to this and... Everyone says my father is such a goddamn gem of a human being, and he can be. And that's the weird, like, thing about Middle Eastern fathers. Mm-hmm. They can be either the kindest, sweetest, most supportful person who wants to just take care of you, or they can be a fucking hard ass who's telling you you're going to suffer the rest of your fucking life because you chose a job in the arts or just a degree in the arts. So I really want to kind of get into that about this weird thing that Middle Eastern kids have to go through with their parents, trying, especially, I guess I'm mostly talking about kids who don't follow the path that the Middle Eastern parent wants, which is go to law school, go to med school, become a doctor, become a lawyer, become an engineer, get a job that will give you money so you can take care of your family and you can go and buy a beautiful house and have money and 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 money. Keep playing that in the background. But then there's this other part where they want to support what you do, yet they don't know how.
Yeah.
It's like this thing where they're almost learning how to appreciate, like, clearly I went into the arts, if you will. I'm a podcaster and my other job is producing podcasts. And then my other job on that is producing more podcasts. So my life is pretty podcast heavy. And my parents really don't understand what that is.
Yeah.
And it's hard to be like, oh, no, no, but like I have a job that gives me health insurance and I make good money and I pay my rent on time and I have a beautiful cat and my life is wonderful. And don't think that I don't have very dark nights because I do. But for the most part, I live a pretty decent, not shitty life, you know? I have a wonderful boyfriend who I love. Like, everything's great, you know?
No.
But then there's still, like, my parents who, like, don't get it. And so because they don't understand it, they're kind of dicks about it. More so my father. And my father has a way about him where he can be very judgmental. And a lot of Middle Eastern parents can be. They have their way of life. They understand their culture. And while they like, my father's been living in America 40 years, longer than he ever even lived in Iran. He came to Iran or America when he was 24 and has been here since. Why can he not really speak that much English? I don't know. No one really fucking knows. It's like, Jesus Christ, man, you've been here for fucking 40 years and you're still like, how do you say this? And it's like, I don't know, man. Figure it out. You have an iPad. But I guess I'm just trying to say is, no matter how old you get, you will always feel that angst coming from the Middle Eastern parent that you didn't do what they wanted.
Yeah.
And it's hard to not lose your shit, which I did lose my shit this week. And I had a moment where I was like a vein burst in my eye. And I was like, oh, yeah, you pushed me to the edge. And I like could not see straight. And I think I had a rage blackout. Don't remember. But it's this weird thing where I know it sounds crazy, but you just can't let it get to you. Because I have these moments where I think, like, why am I just not enough? Like, why can I not just be enough for getting as far as I have, getting through college, getting a degree, getting out here by myself, working my way up into what I have now? Like, why is that not enough? Because it's not a job you wanted me to do. Mm-hmm. And that's always been my internal struggle. Sorry, I went to therapy this morning, so like things are fresh. And so it's like trying to be like, look at other people's situations and see within like Middle Eastern parents that you're just not alone and that like you will forever have this hard ass parent who has their view and will always have their view. I don't know. I've like I said, I'm 27 and I'm really starting now to try and let go of that grip they have on me, like emotionally and mentally, that it's okay that I didn't do what they wanted me to do. And it's okay that I went my own way and that I don't have to be enough for them. I just have to be enough for myself. And that's all that matters. And you can't let their weird cultural vibes get you down. You know what I mean?
Yeah. No, I mean, I think a lot of Middle Eastern and just kids of immigrants, whether it's a Middle Eastern immigrant or an Asian immigrant, or a lot of Eastern cultures are very...
They're tough.
They're tough. And respect is a big thing. You have to always respect your parents. Like, I still can't get over white kids saying shut up to their mom or dad.
And like, sometimes it feels so that they don't reciprocate that respect at times. That's what always would get me, is like, you want me to respect you, but I feel like you don't respect my feelings towards things.
I mean, I think for them, I think for Middle Eastern parents, it's their version of protecting or trying to care for you. Like, I relate to a lot, everything that you were saying, like, both of our siblings are either doctors or just more successful than us in whatever way, financially, mostly. My sister's a doctor and I remember my whole life, my dad would say, we have to save money. Both my parents would say, we have to save money for your sister's medical school, because she's always wanted to be a doctor. So I became a resident advisor in college for 1 year because my parents wanted me to come back to community college, to come back to San Diego, to go to community college, because they didn't want to support me studying art in college or film in college. And we had a really rough relationship growing up, and I love my parents more than anything in the world. They're the kindest, most generous, amazing people, but Middle Eastern parents are just so worried about you, and then that worry makes them think that success and stability are only achieved by a certain thing. And my parents don't understand what the fuck I'm doing right now. Like, and I try to explain it to them, and they'll will always support me, but they weren't always like that. Like, when I had to move back home after college, I was there for a couple months. Me and my dad had multiple, like, huge fights. And I remember telling him, like, you can't support one child's dream just because it aligns with your own and ignore the other child. Because Right. Not only does that feel shitty, but you should want them to be happy. And if my happiness is achieved through a different way, that's fine. At the same time, it's right. You can't really, you can never, I feel like you'll always feel like you're not enough. Only because, like, for example, my sister's a doctor, but she's dating a white guy. And that's, like, something that's, like, they had to get over, too. Just because, like, he doesn't understand the culture and he has to learn and, like, all this stuff. So there's always going to be something that comes up that they're unsure about because they're immigrants and because they're adjusting just, like, I don't know. It's strange because there's so much I can relate to what you're saying. And I'm sure so many Middle Eastern boys and girls can relate to what we're saying, that either grew up in a different country than their parents or just were raised in a really strict, weird, not weird, but, you know, like, not like the majority of your classmates.
Right.
Yeah. Different standards.
And I do understand, like, immigrant parents. They came here. They yeah. work so hard. They walk 10,000 miles yeah. in snow every day to get to school to come and give their children the American dream. And then we're sitting here like, well, what about my art degree?
Yeah.
And I can understand. I can
I
see
hate
how
myself,
could that
yeah.
be so frustrating. But then you have to do what's right for you.
Yeah.
And I can't let it get you down because yeah. no matter what, you're in America, you're an American, not American't.
Oh, God.
I'm a Trump supporter. I'm just joking.
Anna, we're going to cut that fucking shit out.
Leave it in, baby. Anyway, you read one Breitbart article. I'm just joking. But yeah, like I was saying, it can be tough to not shut down because mm-hmm. of the angst your parents put towards you and the stress and all that, but
for the longest time I didn't know what the fuck I wanted to do with my life because I thought I wanted to be a psychiatrist because I thought that was the only option and I liked the brain and I was really depressed and I thought I can like relate to people and then I failed AP chemistry so I was like, this is not happening
yeah,
for
I
me.
Yeah, I thought I had to be a lawyer. I spent yeah. all of high school on the debate team being like, well, this is it's what my parents want, and then one day I was like, oh my God, this is so fucking boring.
Yeah. And then I was like, well, if I'm not going to be a doctor, I can try to be a lawyer. And then I thought about how much school I would have to do, yeah. and I just was terrified. And I actually got to college. I chose the furthest college from my house. I had never even seen it before. Nice. And I chose it just because it was so far away, and I knew I had to leave.
And that's a great move, because that's where we met.
Exactly.
I think it's interesting that there's always this weird catch-22 where mm-hmm. your parents came to America to give you the American dream, but then they're, like, super upset you became too Americanized, yeah. and you're like, well, what the fuck,
I was getting so many arguments with my dad about that. We still get arguments about it. I mean, it's this idea of wanting the best for your kids. Like, my dad, like you were saying, like, he left Syria, he was an engineer, but he couldn't use his degree here, so his first job was the graveyard shift at a gas station, and then he would leave to do the day shift at another gas station. And that's how he made a living the first few years he was here, and he now owns a business, and that's great, but you're right. I think when they see their kid in their eyes, not achieving greatness, it makes them frustrated because they did sacrifice in a lifetime for us. Yeah. And I think that applies to a lot of people. I think by default, kids of immigrant parents will relate to each other so much.
I agree. So anyway, I just wanted to get into that because all that shit was fresh in my mind about my dad. And
mm-hmm.
I'm just in therapy today. I was just like, I really don't want this to hold me back. Mm-hmm. I always want to have a relationship with my parents, but I don't want to be mentally or emotionally held back because I'm not doing exactly what they want. Because, unfortunately, I hate to say it, like, soon they will be gone and I'll be on my own and I'll be creating
it's
a whole
life.
World with my own family. And I don't ever want my own kids to feel like they can't do what they feel they want to do.
Yeah. And that's important
world.
To know. I think it's really important to recognize. And I think there will always be, like, a dichotomy between, inside each of us, like, you feeling you're the American in Iran, and then here you're the brown person in America, and me feeling that about Syria. I think being hyphenate people, like Iranian American, Syrian American, there's like this internal struggle that is like reflected in your relationship with your parents for the most part. It's because you don't know how to, I don't know, like you feel like this alien, and it doesn't help that your parents put you at these standards that make you feel like you can't achieve them, and then you just, like, suffer.
Right, and they almost kind of want you to be alien, because they're like, you're with us, we're this different people, and you're like, Mom, here's the thing, different don't go well with high school.
Yeah. It's like, I don't want to be special, I want people to not think I'm a weirdo. Like, I like that we talked about that. I think we should talk more about that kind of stuff, because I think it applies to so many people, and I think people need to hear about that. So thank you for
being
personal.
You're not alone, y'all. We all stress just because we have this multi-million-dollar podcast career. Just joking.
Ha, ha, ha.
We make 10 cents every 2 years.
We haven't made any sense so far.
In 2 years, we'll make a whopping 20 cents.
Woohoo!
But
let's, I'm gonna give a round of applause for dads. Cause we appreciate you and I know
but
you
no,
love us.
No, I can't help you tech support every goddamn time I go home, okay? I don't have time. I just don't have time. You gotta learn to connect the printer to your laptop,
this
your
is
fucking
getting super
self.
Personal. Super personal. Sounds like joking. Something that happened.
Here's the thing. I'm not IT, okay?
We kind of are, though.
Yeah, no,
last
100%.
Time I went to San Diego for my dad's birthday, I set up a Roku for him because for the longest time, he has a really old smart TV in the living room, mm-hmm. and he's been watching Game of Thrones episodes out of order because he VTRs them, and
really
he just, like,
funny.
Can't watch
he
them in order.
He has no idea what's going
and
on
I
in
feel,
the show.
And I felt so sad, and so I went out and I bought him a Roku, because, like, he has a smart TV, it's just old, and doesn't have HBO, like, because he pays for HBO but can't watch on the TV, which is absurd.
Yeah.
And so I finally bought him this device that, like, connects everything, and he was so happy, and, like, I don't mind being tech support sometimes, but I can see that if it was all the time, it would get annoying. But I like being able to be that person for my parents. Because they need you, and we need them. And it all comes around, you know?
What else should we talk about?
Should we get into this heavy shit?
Well, before we do that, I want to shout out some tweeties we got.
Ooh, yeah, let's do this every time. I like this.
At Project Rain, Rachel Summers, she wrote, I'm so freaking white, also British. Is that relevant? And I love your show. Fuck yeah!
We love you!
The more white people that listen to this, the better.
I
and
just
honestly,
want people in Europe listen to this. Like, last week we had someone from
Sweden.
Yeah.
So we don't care about the color of your skin. That's not the point. We just love you for you.
I
and
might make fun
idea.
Of white people a lot. But it's not you, it's just...
It's us.
It's me trying to adjust to what the majority of white people do. It's not. I love white people. I'm not. I feel like when I say that, you don't believe me.
Yeah. But you sound like an extremist in hiding.
Just white people are just so easy to make fun of, and it's just it's just something I gotta do because they need it. They have to. We have to dole it out because it's getting doled out to us. I'll stop. I won't. But you know. But yeah, thanks for listening. Tell all your friends. Let's be big in Europe.
Yeah, we're really trying to take the European market by storm.
I do have to correct something. Last episode, we said one of our tweeters, their name wrong, and we said that they were a girl when really they're a boy. And I need to correct that. Because
subject verb?
Yeah.
Sorry, it's subject. Subject plus verb.
I apologize. Didn't mean to misgender you. That is stupid of us. I should have done my research before assuming.
And every time Shireen misgenders a Twitter person, we cut a finger off.
Yeah, because that's what Arabs do.
That's the ISIS way. speaking of ISIS.
Speaking of ISIS, how many times have you said that?
They took responsibility for the van attack in Barcelona, and if you don't know what I'm talking... Also, here's the thing. Based off last episode, I was literally just, like, being so flip about everything, and I am going to try better to explain everything. Last week, I was just on some shit, but I will try and, like, be more clear on my thoughts. I also really, I was joking about this earlier to nobody, a mirror I was looking into, that I want to have a segment called The Tables Have Turned, where we're like, this week on The Tables Have Turned, and then we just talk about how something has changed that we
Ooh.
Thought. But we actually haven't planned anything, and I just told Shireen about it on air as you were hearing it, so we'll
it
see
sounds
if that
cool.
happens.
Sounds
I just
cool.
like, it just sounds like a really serious, like, NPR show they would do. Just like, The Tables Have Turned.
Very sound effect.
Yeah, we'll come
dun,
up with something. Yeah.
Like Law and Order.
Very, like, CNN meets MSNBC NPR. But anyway, so there was a deadly van attack in Barcelona.
Yeah.
Where 13 people were killed and 100 were injured, where this van just drove into a crowd
just
around...
plowed through.
On Thursday, today, yeah, around 5 p.m. Barcelona time. Okay, I can't even do that accent, so I'm sorry. In the Las Ramblas area, which is just like a shopping and restaurant area with a lot of tourists. They haven't arrested the driver yet. They've arrested two people in connection to the attack.
Maybe
but
they will
the
have
Islamic
found
State,
someone by the time this airs.
Yeah. ISIL's Amaq outlet on Telegram Messenger admitted to the attack. So here's hoping they catch the person.
It's just every day there's something new, and honestly, part of me wants to just, like, not pay attention to the news, and I don't want to even think about it, I don't want to pretend it's not happening, but I can't, and, it frustrates me so much that...
But I just want to say that ISIS is on its... It's slowly, very slowly on its way out as we have been, like, taking out leaders.
Yeah, I think it's true.
Like, Baghdadi was taken out. And hopefully in the next few years we can truly eliminate ISIS. And I think a step to that is helping restabilize Syria, which Shireen will get into a little later.
Yeah. I mean, but at the same time, we thought we got rid of the KKK. And they're still around. So that doesn't make me feel any better. Like, the leader of the KKK, what's-his-face, Duke, he, like, commended the president.
Now,
for,
while
like,
we're here, let's acknowledge the Charlottesville's attack.
Yeah.
That shit whack.
Like, when you think that we all agree that something is evil, like the Holocaust and Nazis, when that still isn't, like, agreed upon, especially not with, like, our leaders of the country, like, what the fuck are we supposed to do? Like, that's why I have such... I mean, it's not that I don't have faith that ISIS will ever be completely eradicated, because I think evil people will always exist. But, like, I thought we all agreed that Nazis were evil. Like, I thought that was a sure thing. I thought white supremacy was a no-no. I thought the KKK was down and out.
The unfortunate thing is, like, the discourse of that is never over. And I always thought... like, the whole Confederate show that the Game of Thrones creators are doing, where they're like, what if the South won? And it's like, here's the thing, though. Like,
I didn't know that they're doing that.
Oh, yeah, you didn't read about this? Confederate? Mm-hmm. People are up in arms about it. They're doing a show where it's like this, like...
Wait, who's upset about it?
The world.
Okay.
No, not the whole world, but... Just a lot of people have been kind of being like, what do you mean, what if the South won? Like, look at the fucking world yeah. we're in right now. Like, you guys have some nerve. But, I mean, they are the Game of Thrones writers, and they're like, guess what? We hired two prominent black TV writers. And it's still like, yeah, that's great. I'm glad. But the fact that you even had to tell us that
yeah.
is kind of like...
It's like,
cool, like
it's like the white friend that's like, I have a black friend. I'm not
yeah.
racist.
No, it's okay. We can make the show.
Yeah.
But also, which is interesting, Aaron McGruder, excuse me, the creator of The Boondocks, has a new TV show coming out, which I'm actually, they haven't said too much. It's Amazon's making it, but basically it's this alt history drama called Black America, or that's mm-hmm. the working title. I don't know what they'll end up calling it. But it's like this dystopian society where instead of, you know, the North, or like basically in the Civil War, it's the premise that after Reconstruction freed African Americans, that we give African Americans Louisiana, Mississippi, and Alabama, and they form their own sovereign nation called mm-hmm. New Colonia, and then the rest is technically America or the United States. So it's like this really wild thing where, like, the first, I don't know, centuries or whatever, it's just like a bunch of assassinations and regime changes, and it's a whole thing. And then it's a better premise than this if the South won the war Confederate drama.
Oh, I think I was thinking.
So, like,
you were
it's like the South successfully seceded from the Union, giving rise to a nation in which slavery remains
legal. So you're talking about the
legal.
Boondocks thing now?
No. This is Confederate that the Game of Thrones.
Okay. That's
people
what I thought.
Writing.
Yeah.
So that's that show where they're doing like giving rise to a nation in which slavery remains legal and has evolved into a modern institution. That's
like,
the show
I don't
Confederate.
Want, I don't think that's.
So I think. That's some bullshit, but this other show Aaron McGruder is making, the Boondocks creator is making, I think is more realistically what we need
yeah.
to see.
It's I just think it's frustrating,
show.
Like, knowing the Game of Thrones people, they're going to spend so much money on this Confederate show. Instead, I think that money can be used elsewhere by, like, funding organizations that actually help out the world instead of, like, some more bullshit television that, like, just shows how evil humans are and doesn't make the world any better. I don't think that helps society at all. Just makes me really frustrated where
no,
the money
it's
goes.
Some trash. And just because they did Game of Thrones, now they're basically untouchable and can do whatever
yeah.
they want. And it's like, that's what you touch on?
Yeah. It's like, just because you're
could argue the South did win the war. Look at us.
Yeah. I would argue that. Look at our fucking president. He said that there are some fine people that were at the neo-Nazi white supremacist rally. Like, what? Like, what? You can't agree that white supremacy is evil and that they're all believing in something completely absurd and intolerable?
Also,
like,
why are people so obsessed with fucking statues?
What are you talking
monuments.
About?
Monuments. Like, people, that whole rally beat was because they took down that Robert E. Lee.
Oh, right.
Monument.
Yeah.
Which is like, why are you guys so emotionally connected? Like, find
They're
a person.
Idols.
Or a dog. Get a
yeah.
dog.
Even
worry
the,
about your dog,
in
not
every
a fucking monument.
In every major religious text, they talk about how bad idols are. And we're still those primitive people that worship idols, if that's
like,
how
you could go
it is.
And take down that Abraham Lincoln Monument in Washington.
Yeah.
I would not blink twice. I'd be
I
like,
wouldn't
do
give
what
a
you've got to fucking
shit.
Have to do.
Like, I went to Washington, I went to the Lincoln Monument just a month or two ago because I was filming a short over there, and I didn't even take a picture of Abraham Lincoln. Like, I genuinely don't care about it. Like,
I'm
just
not emotionally connected to statues
yeah.
like some people seem to be.
Yeah. I don't
anyway.
Know.
Anyway. I mean, cool, take a pic, but like, Wev, you know, whatever.
Yes,
but speaking of neo-Nazis, I want to talk about the
oh god,
the get it together.
This
so,
made me livid.
This blog, so Andrew Anglin, he's a daily. Okay, also shout out to every goddamn country for kicking the Daily Stormer off their fuck. Even Russia was like, "Hail to the motherfucking
yeah.
no! You are not going to be on our fucking servers. Get the fuck out of here."
It's
which
amazing.
Was like, I was like, "Damn, Russia, what's up?" But Yeah, so Andrew Anglin, who's
the worst human
he's an
alive,
editor at
maybe?
Daily Stormer, he put out this, like, how to be an alt-writer and dress for success and be in good shape for their rallies, and it's the fucking funniest thing I've ever seen in my life.
No, 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 but it's funny, but it's also terrifying, because it's like the neo-Nazi white supremacist version of the game, if you know what I'm talking about. It's like the game was this like player's handbook trying to teach boys and men how to manipulate women, and this is the same thing. It's so terrifyingly sad. Yeah. He says, we want to look slick and sexy. He knows that the skinhead style has gone out of vogue. What?
Yeah, here's this best part. We have to be hip and we have to be sexy. This means we have to look good, we have to look dangerous, we have to have humor, we have to look powerful, and we have to look like we're in control. Then they're like, well, fat people should be allowed to join groups and be involved in rallies, but expect them to keep it together or get it together, which is like, what are we talking about?
And then they said that he advocates something referred to as Chad nationalism.
God. I recently went to the Chad nationalism website, and let me just read to you what is Chad nationalism.
Please.
Classically, Chad is someone who you would think is good with women in sport. Being handsome is a common trait among Chads. We view Chad nationalism as a lifestyle. We try to think, what would Chad do here? We have molded the Chad meme into what we want it to be. We see it as Chad as the ideal white man, strong, competitive, and successful at finding a mate, which in my mind makes me think of, like, gorillas, but okay. When Chad is being subtle, then I just... It's more subtle than I just described. Some say that Chad types are bullies. We don't see it as bullying. We see it as bending other men to your will, which is pretty gay.
Like, what the...
Like, what do you... Why would you refer to bending other men to your will? It sounds like you're...
Like,
anyway.
Bending them over?
Yeah, like, great use
but
of language,
Anglin says he wants to use Chad nationalism to, quote-unquote, make girls want to be our groupies and make us look like bad boys and heroes.
Like, is this not the saddest thing you've ever heard? Like, just like,
no,
they're like, come on, guys, our brand is going down. We gotta be sexy. Tight shirts.
Yeah.
Tuck your shirt in. You're a goddamn alt-writer, man. You look the part.
He says the worst look ever is a baggy t-shirt. Wear fitted shirts where the sleeve goes to the middle of your bicep. It should not hang lower than the base of your member.
And then here's my favorite part. Don't ever wear shorts. Serious men in serious situations are not wearing shorts.
That made me laugh a lot.
It's like, are you guys all out of your fucking mind?
But no, okay, it's hilarious, but the the most terrifying part is, like, people are, like, reading this, like, eating it up, being like, yeah, these are my bros. Like, I'm gonna look sexy so I can get some groupies, and, like, I'm a skinhead now, but I won't be in, like, when my hair grows out and I work out and wear a tight shirt. Like, no, dude. Like,
also, there was a character on The Bachelorette, he's a real person, but let's be real.
Come on, he's
characters.
A character.
His name is Chad, and he was, like, literally one of the worst villains in Bachelorette history. Like, he was such a piece of shit, and he basically got kicked off the show for, like, people being scared he was gonna, like, violently attack them, and he would just, like, constantly threaten people and be like, I'll kill you. And, like, he got kicked off Bachelor in Paradise for just being, like, way too intense.
I have no idea.
So, like, when you say Chad to me, I immediately think of him, and I'm like, that's the worst person I've ever seen in my life. Like, how is this okay?
Oh, God. I don't understand how people operate. But for the first time ever, I understand reality television. I still don't watch reality television, like, including The Bachelor. Anna's job is
that. I produce a podcast about The Bachelor, Bachelorette.
But for the first time ever, I understand the appeal of, like, watching something mind-numbing and forgetting about the world. Like, watching something that doesn't affect anything else and just doing that. Because I kind of want to do that. And I'm not going to watch reality TV. I'll just sleep until I die, but, you know. It's really, like, oh my God. We'll read the link and you can laugh a bit.
Yeah,
and
we'll
then
post
cry.
The link. It's so fucking weird. It's just like, it's like, give up.
It's like fat shaming to the next level.
Yeah, they're like, what's all these fucking fat fucks trying to join the alt-right movement?
Yeah.
It's like, why do you have a movement?
Yeah.
Go fuck yourself. Have some respect. Also, I highly recommend checking out the Vice Charlottesville coverage. It's real well done. It's real good. And they follow this guy who's an alt-writer, and it is insane.
Yeah.
High rec.
Yeah, highly recommend. What happened was atrocious, and I feel like every time I talk about something, I get so sad.
That's but what we're doing gonna talk here, about, baby.
I think I want to talk about...
Do you want to... Yeah, maybe you should talk about Syria, and then we can cover a few of our cool women in Islam thing. To kind of like, because we're going to go a little down, and then we're going to come right back up, bitches.
So,
sorry, not to call everyone bitches.
So,
also, we're not really going to talk about Saudi Arabia this week because I feel like last week I went a little too hard, and I just want to like kind of stay positive because we're about to get into some heavy shit in Syria. Mm-hmm. I do want to say that the Saudi prince Salman is trying to get out of the war with Yemen, which is good. He's kind of over it, according to some leaked emails, which is like, oh, how convenient.
Over it like a fashion fad or something.
Yeah, like he's like, whatever. Yeah. And he's trying to help.
People are dying.
They want to now start mending ties with Iran, which, yeah, I don't know how that's going to go, but they're asking for Iraq and the U.S.'s help to kind of smooth things over. So mm-hmm. I don't know if this cool young prince who forced his way into office is, like, actually really good. I don't know.
We'll find
out,
I guess.
But he's definitely making some progressive steps to try and cause less terror and murder and the Middle East. We'll see how it goes. We'll update you guys more next week. Also, on a quick update about Qatar, they have opened the borders to Qatar, not fully, but to allow pilgrims to come to Hajj, which is basically a pilgrimage to Mecca. So they
For Muslims.
So they're allowing them to come through because they understand, hey, you know, you got a pilgrimage,
religious.
You got a pilgrimage.
Like, it's extremely important for that religion to do that once in your lifetime.
So they're allowing the Hajj pilgrims to pass through. There's not too much more information. I mean, the King Salman bin, you know, he's welcoming them in. So
that's a good thing, you know.
And he's apparently to bring all Qatari pilgrims on his expense on Saudi Airlines to be sent to the Doha airport, which is... That's something.
I hope that continues. It's a good trend. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not saying team Saudi Arabia all of a sudden. I'm just saying things are happening. We're not going to get into too many details. I highly recommend going to Al Jazeera. We'll post links on our site if you want to read more. But those are some quick updates. But yeah, let's get into Syria.
So I heard this on the radio. NPR was covering it a little bit, and it's basically a New Yorker radio episode, and it talks about the case against Assad being Assad, Bashar al-Assad. And it talks about the CIAJA, which is the CIA, but it's for Justice and Accountability. And basically... in Western Europe, this commission, it stands for the Commission of International Justice and Accountability. It's been gathering evidence of war crimes. Yeah, CIJA. It's been gathering evidence of war crimes specifically perpetrated by the Syrian government. And, even though it's unclear or whether Assad might even stand trial, they've been securing evidence for the past 6 or 7 years, and they're building a case because what Assad has been doing is the strongest war crime it's been the worst war crime since Nazi officials were tried at Nuremberg. And I read through this article, I listened to the episode, it's atrocious. And I'll be frank here, it's really hard for me to talk about Syria, and it's really hard for me to even not feel immense survivor's guilt when I think about it, and when I think about my life here, and when I think about my family, and I have a lot of family, and some of them are still in Syria, and they're trapped, and some of them are scattered everywhere, and that's just the reality of Syrian people right now, and it breaks my heart, because I can't do anything about it. So I want to talk about this in particular, because I think everyone should read this article and listen to this, because it's truly mind-opening for anyone that is unclear with what Assyria is doing to its people. So anyways,
did you say what Assyria is doing to
people? Sorry, I said and then Syria.
Guys, I'm just here to keep it a little light. Sorry.
Thank you.
Continue.
So Ben Taub, T-A-U-B, he is a writer for The New Yorker, and he wrote about the CIAJA CIJA. He wrote about it last year in April, and I'm going to link his article because it's amazing and you should read it. But he talks about how this commission has a 400-page legal brief that links systematic torture and murders of tens of thousands of Syrians, but to specifically Bashar al-Assad, because he coordinated all of these murders with his central intelligence agencies. And it basically, this CIJA has accumulated a record of state-sponsored torture that's unimaginable. And it's been reported by survivors before in Syria, but there's never been, it's never been traced to actual physical evidence. And I think they have so much of it now. They're just waiting for something to break and to take Assad to trial, because what he's doing is the worst.
And but, that's so important.
Yeah.
Because really, at this, the only way to get in is to take him to court for war crimes. Because at this point, going in and like dropping missiles and stuff on his land and then military areas. Sorry, I don't know what anything is called. It just hasn't proven successful.
Yeah.
And everyone kind of, all countries kind of struggle to bring people in there and bring their own military power in there because of ISIS and so much that's going on. It's just so destabilized.
Yeah.
It's impossible to just get in there. And I feel like right now the best we can do, in my uninformed, stupid opinion, is try and bring him in for war crimes.
And
because
that's
he's clearly committed such things.
That's the same opinion of the founder of CIJA, Bill Wiley. He was the one who thought of the idea, instead of trying to arm humanitarian efforts in Syria and help them, like, he did that as well, but he had this idea of teaching and instructing the Syrian people that are working in the government to leak documents to him. And in Syria, nothing is digital. Everything has its physical paper. Assad signs everything. His officials sign everything. So basically, there are thousands of papers hidden in caves in Syria or smuggled out. CIJA has 400, like, 1,000 papers just, like, dictating meeting minutes and specific things, like specific detention centers where people were tortured and labeled with numbers. I'm going to read something really quick from this article. It says, counting Syria's dead has become nearly impossible. The UN stopped trying more than 3 years ago, but the groups monitoring the conflict have estimated the number to be almost 500,000, with the pace of killing accelerating each year. The war has emptied out the country, with some 5 million Syrians escaping to neighboring countries and to Europe, which I relate to a lot because my family has been doing that.
That's wild that the UN has stopped counting.
Yeah.
Like, how crazy is that the UN is even like, well, can't keep track, sorry.
Yeah, it's the worst thing I've ever read, because it's like, how, I don't know, like, you would think with, like, this day and age, like, they would just have some type of system to give those people more than just a statistic, you know, like, those were family members, those were children and mothers and fathers that were just killed, and now we don't even know who they are. So, but Syria, when the conflict first happened, they had, protests were a new and unfamiliar thing, like, public demonstration against your government was unheard of, so that was met with, like, gunfire and tear gas, and that's how this conflict got so much attention, because Assad was retaliating in extremely violent ways. But basically, they hired someone when these protests started happening. Assad created a group called the Crisis Cell, and all of his top officials would meet every week and talk about how to stamp out the rebellion, basically. And
Cell makes it sound like they're terrorists.
Oh, really?
How interesting.
Yeah. But they hired someone to keep track of the paperwork. And this person,
they're so official with paperwork about who they're killing. They're like, we did file that paperwork on that mass murder, right?
Yeah. But they hired this 24-year-old, and his name is Abdelmajid Barakat, and he was hired to handle the paperwork, and
that's
he wasn't allowed in any meetings.
Not gonna lie, that's a pretty dope gig.
I know. but he wasn't allowed in any meetings, but he was in charge of all the papers. And so he had always been on the side of the rebellion, but kept it secret. And then he had learned that his secretary was spying on him. And so when they were off, he ransacked their offices and he fled the country the same day. He drove to the border of Turkey, which is like 250 miles. And he taped thousands of papers to his body.
Holy shit.
And he fled the country.
Game of Thrones creators, this is a fucking better TV show than Confederate. Yeah. What the fuck?
And then he waited until his mother was safely out of the country, and then he went to Al Jazeera with all these papers, and Sija eventually heard about it and took
them.
That's
so dope.
Yeah.
Holy shit.
But because everything is on paper, paper becomes really heavy and difficult to transport, because when you have thousands and tens of thousands of papers that are your evidence, like, how do you hide that? How do you let alone transport that without being suspicious?
And it's not like drugs where you can just eat it and shit it out later.
Yeah, exactly. Like, paper gets fucked up when you put it in your mouth. So
hey, you can't just put paper up your goddamn anal cavity. Not that I haven't tried.
So
sorry, that was so
we got too personal there. But Ben Taub, the writer of this article, he talks a lot about Mazen al-Hamada, and he had been someone that his family had always been outspoken about the government, and he was eventually imprisoned and brutally tortured. I'm not going to get into detail because it's really horrific, but
they tickle his toes with feathers and they're like, tell us.
Yeah, just like that. Really horrendous stuff. But he's alive still and in Europe, but he's still in rehab, recovering from everything.
Yeah, I don't see that PTSD going away anytime soon.
Oh, I mean physical rehab. I didn't mean like actual rehab. I mean like he's physically in rehabilitation for all of his injuries still years later. But his
HBO trying to sell a TV show. You're listening, right, HBO?
But the most atrocious thing I've ever heard that I read was after he was in a detention center and they were torturing him, he was sent to this place called Hospital 601, which is, it's given that name in English, but they dubbed it Hospital 601. And basically, there were just dead bodies everywhere. And each corpse has a unique number, and either it was like on a piece of paper on their chest, or it was marked with a marker on their forehead. But it signified the intelligence branch in which the patient had been killed. And there were about 11,000 bodies in this place called Hospital 601. And Hamada is based on his account, but also this military officer smuggled thousands of photos out of the country. So there are thousands of photos that corroborate Hamada's story about Hospital 601. And holy all shit, of these bodies,
dead bodies hidden in toilets, loaded up in trucks. Oh, sorry.
Yeah.
She's sorry.
I had some bullet points that I wanted to talk about, but there were
dead bodies hidden in toilets.
Yep. He would go to the hallways, in the restrooms. There were just dead bodies everywhere. And doctors and nurses were ordered. They were just all malpracticed, and they were like beating him when he got there. And all the patients had died, in their words, of a heart attack. So on all of the certificates, they would, if the families ever got the body back, they would have to agree to sign a paper that they were killed either by a terrorist attack or a heart attack.
Oh my god.
That
is gnar.
Yep.
What are we doing?
But, this photographer, or not the photographer, this military police officer that smuggled these photographs out of Syria, he cataloged more than 50 corpses a day.
Oh,
either they were emaciated, mutilated, cut, burned, shot, beaten, strangled, broken, and melted.
And Assad's just like, well, it's my coffee. I'm so thirsty.
No, the worst thing is,
dead bodies
there
everywhere.
Was a 13-year-old boy that he was questioned about because they had tortured a 13-year-old boy. And
of course
they had put... This is really graphic. I'm not going to talk about it. But they had tortured him, and eventually he died, this 13-year-old boy. And Assad was actually questioned about that boy, and Assad said, there's no way you can't be sure that wasn't done by terrorists and not the government.
That's
even though
so wild,
proof.
Because the government are terrorists.
Yeah.
So it's almost like he's just basically admitting to it because he's a fucking monster.
Yeah. And, I mean...
What the fuck?
Caesar, the military police officer, he eventually fled Syria in August 2013. He had flash drives hidden in his socks. And these photographs remained a secret until after he had spoken to the team of prosecutors and forensic experts in Syria. I'm summarizing this article so briefly, but I need you all to read this. Go to the link on the Farrell website. Go read the New Yorker article that Ben Taub, he wrote it in April of 2016, but it's still so relevant, and the New Yorker radio episode is the recent, like, follow-up of that article. I would recommend both of them so highly. I mean, especially because yesterday, this girl I was working with literally asked me, like, wait, what's going on in Syria again? And that really crushed me.
Usually, like, dead bodies in toilets?
Because, like, I understand people not being aware of it because they're not affected by it, but it's... being so flippant about something that has been going on for so long and I don't know. I mean, I don't know how I would how intelligent I would be about the subject if I wasn't Syrian. Like, I can't begin to guess that, but it does bother me as a Syrian American, people still not really knowing the degree of atrocity that's happening. Like, and I refuse to call it a war because it's not a war. It's a genocide. And it is the worst crime against humanity to happen since the Holocaust. And people don't see it that way because they see it as this, like, violent Middle Eastern country that's just, like, doing its thing. It's the Arab Spring, you know, it'll get over it. But no, this is the government literally melting and torturing bodies with numbers. Like, hospital that is meant to save people, just, I don't know. Just please read the article and educate yourself. Share it with whoever needs to be educated about Syria. Even those who just are unaware, I think it's important to know what's going on in the world.
But
now that I'm done with that, I hope you can be ready for some good things. Excellence Corner, Anna.
Well, yeah, I'll try and be positive after that. That was wild. Yeah, that's fucked.
I feel like we have to talk about
it. No, we definitely have to talk about it. I'm just, you know, it's tough. It's fucking tough.
It's really
hard
for
me to talk about.
More
than anything
that
you can't, there's nothing, like, there's this untouchable figure.
Mm-hmm.
That literally, like, we just can't go in and just fucking pull his ass out of there.
Why do you think I have such a revenge fantasy about killing him? Because I'm so mad tough. And I can't do anything. I've been so frustrated my whole life because I can't do anything about any problem over there.
All right, let's try and do an excellence minute, which is going to be 3 excellence minutes because we have 3 minutes of excellence. So I want to talk about Kuala Lumpur. She is... one of the first 2 female Syara High Court judges in Malaysia, which is a Muslim majority nation, and Syria is it's an Malaysian spelling for the Arabic word Sharia, which is Islamic law. So, you know, when everyone's like, all those white people are like, Obama's trying to make us do Sharia law, which is like, shut the fuck up.
Oh, I love this quote.
So she's a judge. Mm-hmm. She won the first 2 female judges on the high court, which is really wild because she's the mother. She's a 42-year-old mother of 3, and she's like hardcore. So this is a quote from her: "When I'm on the bench, I'm not a woman. I'm not a man. I'm a judge." Which is like, hell yeah,
that's dope. I love that.
"I need to deal with the case fair and firm to follow the law, no bias."
Dude, so, what a fucking badass.
Yeah. So out of 160, the country's 160 Islamic court judges, 27 are women, and like, more women are getting into Islam, or just the courts in Malaysia, and they're pursuing careers in Islamic justice system, and they're becoming judges and lawyers and court mediators, and it's pretty wild and it's amazing because Malaysia is a very intense Muslim country, mm-hmm. and it's hard within Islam to get ahead as women, and when they're out there and they're doing it,
Yeah. That's amazing. I'm so...
Also, I'm sorry. I said her name was Kuala Lumpur. Her name is actually Neni Shushaida Binti Samshudin.
What's Kuala Lumpur? That's the city?
I think that's the city.
That sounded like
idiot.
A city when you said it.
So. I'm an idiot. So
not all of us are judges, so it's fine.
Yeah, she's amazing. She's doing her thing. She's intense, man. She ain't no woman. She ain't no man.
Yeah.
She ain't no fucking judge.
You can be a mother. You can be a Muslim. You can be a woman.
I do feel bad for her three kids who are like, you know, it's tough out there. Mama's tough. If you know what I mean.
They come back home from school every day, and she's like,
where
give
have you
me
been?
The evidence.
She's like, where are you at 3:04 p.m. supposed to be on the bus home?
Let me see the bottom of your shoe. Is there dirt on it or pavement?
Yeah. Do you want to talk about this next one?
Yeah. A Muslim woman was competing in the Miss Universe pageant in Great Britain, and she made history last week because she decided she would not wear a swimsuit in the swimsuit portion.
Yeah, she said no to a bikini. Her name was Muna Jama?
Yeah, her name is Muna Jama, and she said, I wouldn't wear a bikini to the beach, so I'm not going to wear one in a competition to score points. And after she talked to the pageant heads, they decided she would be allowed to cover up if she chose to. And with this decision, she became the first woman to wear a cover up during the bikini portion of the pageant.
She
looked
real
dope.
Cute kaftan.
She looked dope.
It's pretty.
I think that just, it's great for any woman that is just wear what makes you confident. You don't have to like bikini season.
Yeah, you don't
doesn't
have to go
mean
by any culture standards.
Yeah. And it's just good for Muslim women out there to still be a part of these pageants, even though I think beauty pageants are not, it's just not my cup of tea, but I think it's good for Muslim women to be represented. So, woohoo, props to Muna Jama! Bam, 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 bam.
Yeah, that's awesome. So shout out to you for doing you and not giving a shit about anyone.
Yeah.
And it's pretty dope.
Yeah.
Kaftan. I'll try and find that. Purchase it for myself.
but let's talk about
one more. Malala! Woo! Our girl Malala got into Oxford. It's pretty amazing. She tweeted that she's so excited after gaining a place at Oxford University. And if you
she's
don't know who Malala Yousafzai is, she's the 20-year-old Nobel Peace Prize winner who was basically in
almost
an attempted
killed.
Assassination by the Pakistan Taliban for campaigning for girls' rights and education. And so she is going to study philosophy, politics, and economics, and she's probably going to be the leader of the world soon.
I would love that, please.
And she
especially
should be
after
because
this week.
She's dope. But I also, it's really funny that she's like had to apply to get into Oxford. It's like, she's a Nobel Peace Prize winner.
Do you think that when they saw her name on the application, they were like,
Well, actually, it was an offer that she got, but they said there was like, she had to get like all A's in her like A-level exams and stuff.
Oh.
So basically, she would get in if she did well in her final exams, which she did. So she just
so she's
got into-
smart and brilliant and just
yeah, she's a genius. But I just think it's so funny because she's so like down to earth. She tweeted like so excited to go to Oxford and
like
shouted out her other students or friends who were like hell yeah, woo!
I love that her dad tweeted, "My heart is full of gratitude. We are grateful to Allah and thank you all." Thanks to all those who support Malala for the grand cause of education. And he also used like the numbers 2 and 4 because he had to squeeze it all in a tweet. And I just love that her dad does that and her dad did that at all.
It's pretty amazing. She's going to Oxford. I think she should just like run everything.
Please.
When she graduates at 24, she'll probably be ready to run everything and we should just give her a job ASAP.
I agree.
She won a goddamn Nobel Peace Prize.
I want to be in that Black Mirror episode.
Literally, like, someone's like, oh, sorry, Malala, you're going to have to apply. It's like, your SAT scores were good, but not great. And she's like, my SAT scores a motherfucking Nobel Peace Prize, bitch.
Dude. That's a,
That's what someone said to me. They're like, her SAT scores were a Nobel Peace Prize.
That's a good point. You don't need just a like, fucking test score when
like,
you
I'm
have
sorry,
those.
What do you need? An application? What about just Google my name?
Yeah.
Malala? Maybe you've heard of it. Yeah. I've written a book. It's called I Am Malala.
Yeah.
Like, give me
I was
a fucking
shot
break.
And I.
Oh, sorry. Gotta run. I have a quick gig at the Daily Show. Like, are you kidding me? So yeah, that's dope. Malala's everything.
Yeah. I'm really glad we're ending on a good note because everything that's going on It's really hard to not get down, but good things are still happening. I have kind of...
Ma-la-la! Ma-la-la! Ma-la-la!
Should this episode...
Like 3 days.
What should this episode be called? We Are Malala?
I was going to say We Are Our Fathers.
Ooh! You heard it here first. We are our fathers. Bam, 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 bam. That sounds like a commercial. What's that commercial?
That's,
We Are Farmers. Bam, bam,
bam, bam, bam, bam. State Farm?
Is that farmers insurance?
Farmers insurance.
Very similar, I just realized.
Huh, what if my farm usage and insurance? Okay.
I should think of something new.
All right. So, Shereen, are you going to bite that ass?
You know what? I'd bite that ass.
Yeah.
Bye.